blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Savaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Savaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Sangam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Savaha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gami Adipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient and anicca. All formations are subject to suffering. Dukkha. All things are without a self. Anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo Prajna Paramita Hridaya. Homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Oh, happy blessed day. Oh, happy blessed place. Oh, happy blessed time. Oh, happy blessed path. Oh, happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply bow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutyampi tatyampi sabaha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity. And the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. suffering. If any suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If any suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
What shall we look at this morning? Renee?
I was just looking at the noise in the world.
It's kind of obvious when you just come to the monastery from the world, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it is, definitely. I've been looking at it since I left the New Year's retreat.
Mm-hmm.
How to find the quiet in it, and I don't have a complete solution or anything, but just looking at it in terms of what triggers me to be identified. So, you know, like the news or other people's problems, or, you know, all the things that go on, phone calls or bills or whatever it might be, and just seeing just how hard it is to stay present in that.
How much life in the world is set up to not be present?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and how much conversation I'm in most of the time.
That's the key thing, isn't it? It actually isn't the external noise, really, even though that kind of triggers, but it's really this noise is. Yeah, because I think what you're saying was you're looking at how to find the quiet in all of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's definitely a way to do it, you know, in terms of being present in it all, or with it all going on.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of the same as the internal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The external is just outside of me, you know.
Mm-hmm. So you could relate to the external noise with a lot of internal noise.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could relate to the external noise with a sense of quiet inside and the ability to be present. And that's what you're exploring. You really noticed, it sounds like, that that's what you want, especially since the New Year's retreat. And you've been trying to see, well, how can you stay quiet inside in the midst of all of this stuff in the world you live in that is attempting to distract your attention?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just, it's a different way that I've practiced, I think, from the past to now. So before it was going to find that place, like somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Like going on retreat, for example.
On retreat or
going to a quiet place in the woods.
Right, yeah, or even meditating in my own house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that would be a quiet place to go and meditate and find some quiet. Or turning off all the televisions or the news or trying not to engage with people who are negative or, you know, those sorts of, that trigger me to go down to that, go into that place.
Mm-hmm.
instead sort of accepting it as it's part of where I'm at, and then just paying attention to it when it happens. Like, so in the morning, sometimes the news is on in my house, not by my choice, but by someone else's choice. And so I hear it, and I hear a story on the news, and instead of pushing it or resisting it away, thinking, okay, I see how I got triggered by that, and how the conversation then went to this, and then to this, and then to this internally. So, you know, being with that instead of trying to escape it.
Yeah, there's a lot more freedom in that, isn't there? Mm-hmm. The first option one, which is sounds like basically trying to avoid anything that's mm-hmm. going to pull you out of the moment, could look a lot like spiritual practice, mm-hmm. but it really isn't, is it?
Right.
I mean, all, I don't know if you could say that black and white. You could say it's, you know, maybe to a certain mm-hmm. Point that's useful. Mm-hmm. But then we get to a point where it's not really necessary anymore because mm-hmm. our ability to be present has developed to the place where we can be present with all of these other things that are going on. And so instead of having to set up life in sort of, you could say, even in a conditional way, where the conditions for me to be present are that I don't have this, 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 and this happening, mm-hmm. it sounds like what you're exploring is how can you bring all those things into your practice?
Yeah, and also at work, so there's... I work with quite a few difficult personalities at work, and you never know where they're going to corner you, you know, or catch you off guard. And so, you know, I mostly try to avoid them. And I'm glad I'm on the financial side instead of the clinical side, because, you know, they get a lot worse than I do. But trying to embrace that, too, mm-hmm. in terms of, okay, this person's really upset, and... Mm-hmm.
What I hear you saying is that your practice is expanding.
Yeah.
And, you know, you, mm-hmm. you as your awareness inside of that is expanding, you're seeing ways that you can embrace things that have been, feels like maybe kind of, have felt like outside of...
Yeah, definitely.
Outside of your ability to embrace before.
Well, yeah, I think it was separate from, or, well, I mean, I don't think it's ever really separate, but it was separate from... So I didn't see the way to bring it in, mm-hmm. whereas I'm seeing more ways to bring it in and mm-hmm. practicing with those mm-hmm. a little bit more.
And I'm projecting a stronger mm-hmm. place inside
right.
from which to do that.
Yeah, and being the observer of it instead mm-hmm. of the identified person who's a victim to it mm-hmm. or, you know, being feeling stuck in that place. Mm-hmm. Or I wish I could get away from this, or mm-hmm. I wish I could go to the monastery and live, or, you know, whatever the story is.
Yeah. You know, it's good that it goes the way that it goes, because mm-hmm. this seems like kind of a universal experience that people have as they go along through practice. Mm-hmm. Because the alternative, you know, people talk about it as quietism, where we're attempting to, you know, eliminate anything that will basically disturb this sense of equanimity mm-hmm. that we're trying to build up. And, which is okay, but it's not free. And
right.
especially for someone who has a life like you, where mm-hmm. somebody else is making a choice about whether the television goes on in the morning, and mm-hmm. you don't have a lot of choice about these difficult personalities you're interacting with at work. If the best you've got is quietism, mm-hmm. then it's going to be kind of a rough go, because there's
right.
going to be a lot of mm-hmm. times when you feel like you can't have the life that you want.
Right.
But pulling all that in and recognizing that all that's part of practice and getting it that, you know, we're not going for like a state of equanimity. We're going for, like you said earlier, you know, really seeing how it works, seeing how mm-hmm. this causes that and this mm-hmm. thought does that, and really getting a sense of how we cause ourselves to suffer. Then it doesn't really matter what the circumstances are. They're all giving us the experience that we want.
Yeah, exactly. And so being compassionate, too, in that moment, so to myself and others, in terms of it being, that's exactly what you said, though, definitely, I can see mm-hmm. how it's expanding in that way. But also seeing how when I do that, it is a gift.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of being outside of it, but also with it, you know, so the other person has a sense of it, and I've experienced that, where they calm down really quickly, mm-hmm. or they feel accepted, or, mm-hmm. or you know, and then I feel more peaceful. Mm-hmm. And I don't, and then seeing all my own stories about owning it, or, you know, someone coming at me with something really negative, even though it may be, they may be acting like it's directed at me, it really isn't about me. Mm-hmm. Whereas the other way, it is about me. Mm-hmm. It becomes about me internally.
Yeah, the old way is you identify with it.
Right.
To whatever the reaction is. And then, you know, you're basically just surviving that event, whatever it might be.
Yeah, exactly.
But now you're not identified with it. You're not taking it personally. And so there's access to compassion and to... Mm-hmm. you know, other experiences in yourself, and it sounds like, at least seems like, that has an effect on the other people too. They kind of calm down, they might feel accepted, mm-hmm. because you're bringing something to, you know, the event that's happening that's outside of, you know, all of the conditioned patterns that are supposed to be there.
Right, which tends to be something that I strive for, you know, so it's also another conditioned pattern, so, you know, to be this guru or something, you know. I'm just noticing that right now. Mm-hmm. You know how you just, like, I want to be that in a different way than being actually with it.
Are you sure that's conditioned?
I'm not sure. I just saw it just now, just mm-hmm. how that might be. I don't know if that's a story or not.
Yeah. Well, it's easy to imagine that there, I'll tell you how it works for me anyway. There's the insight, it's like, you know, or the presence, and then conditioning will come in and try to take advantage of that. You know, so mm-hmm. something yes. skillful happens. Oh, I did that.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, that was me. You know, oh, look how good I am. But that's not the same as the original insight that came up.
No, right. Yeah.
Exactly. So it's easy to project, you know, that compassion is you. It's what's authentically there. Mm-hmm. Of course, conditioning is going to try to claim it for itself, because what else is it going to do? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think the other thing that's really assisting in all of this is... I'm doing this project of starting a business to bring mindfulness to work, mm-hmm. and that's really assisting me with it, with no real timeline or.
You mean an actual business?
Yes.
Okay, interesting. Huh.
And so I'm finding these other people who are doing this, mm-hmm. and through all the electronic ways and books and websites And so it's bringing this new perspective and noticing how, you know, how other people are doing it and mm-hmm. reading about it. And
well, it sounds like a lot of fun.
It is. And so I think that's what's helped. Because one of the problems or challenges is finding other people in the business world who are like-minded, or in the world, period, mm-hmm. who are like-minded. And doing this, I'm finding these little... tidbits all the time, like on Twitter, and so I'm reading them periodically throughout the day, or getting emails about different things going on, and it's been really helpful.
Really supportive. Yeah, it's kind of like you're building a mindful community.
Because before I was isolated in it, like, mm-hmm. you know, I had the Sangha and I had the practice. Now I don't feel as isolated. Mm-hmm. There's so sort of this worldwide sangha with mindfulness at work that I'm finding.
Mm-hmm. It really kind of goes full circle to what you started talking about, mm-hmm. Doesn't it? But how can you be quiet and present in the world? Mm-hmm. You know, if you're on your own trying to do it, that's right. That's
yeah.
tough.
Yeah.
But to find out, there's always other people doing it, and here's the supports they're offering, and even just it sounds like you have the reminders that there's other people out there who's really, really supportive.
Yeah.
It really... I don't know, I can't remember if you said it or if it just came through for me, but, you know, just this idea that you hear around that, you know, once you, if you set an intention for something, mm-hmm. I think you did say something about, that's your being mindful of work, that's your intention, mm-hmm. and so all these things are happening, mm-hmm. and so it does seem to be the way it goes, doesn't it? So this is what I want, and then without that intention, there's really nothing that can come together or happen, or mm-hmm. there's, you know, but to set the intention, and suddenly these little coincidences start coming together, and
exactly.
everything yeah. starts to line up in that direction.
Yeah. yeah, and how conditioning tries to keep you so isolated, mm-hmm. you know, or it makes you feel you're isolated, or whatever the story is, like, I'm the only one, no one's mindful at work, ever, mm-hmm. you know, that was my story before, you know, uh-huh. and then I start going down that path, going, oh, wow, you know, I want to do this at work, and I start setting a schedule, and I start breaking up the day a little bit and stopping at certain points, recording and listening during the day, you know, bringing it all in, and then I start looking for people on the internet, and there's like this huge amount of support.
Yeah, this is one of those watch out conditioning moments. You don't have a chance for that kind of intention, does it?
Yeah, and there's also people who are doing it as family, in family, in relationship, in
mindfulness
household,
practice.
That are on like Twitter and. And so I get their little tweets too, and you know, and I make it, I only do the mindfulness ones on Twitter. I don't do any other, you know, I don't know, ESPN or anything like that, you know. I just do the
scores.
You can do just about anything. So, yeah. So it's fun, and it's fun to bring it here and talk about it, and also, you know, mix them sort of together.
Yeah, it makes so much, such a difference, doesn't it, to just decide what you want and head in that direction. Yeah. I mean, that's what I hear is happening, is you know you want this. You came out of San Sabino, probably before that, but at least in San Sabino, the question, how can I have what I want? And now everything is opening up for you to get that.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you.
June.
That's great. My current focus is making and keeping commitments to myself. And the lots that I'm currently working with, saying really, they're just extremely trivial. But, and I'm going to tell you what they are in a minute, but the process, the making and keeping commitments to myself is just crucial. It's just, I put it as the absolute center of my life.
Anything but trivial.
Yeah. And so here are the lots. It has to do with eating. And up until, well, including now, I have not been a person who can do something like, say, make a pan of monastery brownies and not overeat them rather severely.
So before you go on, just for the people out there in the Coeur d'Alene, the reason you said I'm not the kind of person who, in the way you did, is because that's there's an exercise we do where you just say, I'm the kind of person who, and you do that about 20 times, and you get a sense of what your conditioning is.
It's and in the past, and something like buying a bag of tortilla chips or something. If I do, I'm running the risk. I mean, the way that I tell myself is that I have no governor. You know, like a
school
truck. Yeah, like a school
bus.
It's just not there.
It's either wide open or nothing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. And I also do it around watching sports on TV. You know, there's it's, you know, 6 hours or nothing. So instead of saying, okay, no sports on TV, no monastery grannies or whatever, no chips, no whatever, no, I'm not a person, I can't have those things because I'm unable to stay at center of it. That doesn't seem free.
No.
And yet, up until, I mean, as of right now, I have no ability to, I could go home this afternoon and make loaf fat gingerbread, and I really run the risk. And so there's, so why am I talking about this? Okay. I think I'd like to hear, what other people's experience and things like that are. I know that in certain areas I am making and keeping commitments to myself. I'm actually losing weight.
So even in the food area?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But that's only so long as I don't have that sort of thing around. Anything that's a treat, in quotes, I just have an extremely, it's just, I guess it's karma conditioning, I know it is. I just have an extremely difficult time staying, not following the voice, not abandoning the commitment to moderation. And I want to see through it. I want to be a person who is not caught in that trap.
So what I heard you say was you'd be interested in hearing what other people, what is their experience of that?
Yeah.
Okay, should we do that? And then we'll come back.
If it suits.
I think that does suit. Penny.
I wanted to respond just to something that they said at once, the back of it, yeah?
Sure. I don't want to lose that thread.
I won't.
Okay.
I just was appreciative of the comments about quietism, you know, and how to sort of be in the world, because I find myself dealing with that a lot, being involved in the community, which from my perspective has taken a turn for the worst. and there's such a temptation to just say, well, bag it. You know, I'm not going to participate anymore. It's a temptation that conditioning can grab hold of and make it about equanimity or about, you know, about somehow practicing. And how much more difficult it is to stay with it and find that quiet place, that truly quiet place, internally in the midst of it. So I just was appreciative of that. And I you know, I can see in the midst of it so many places to go, one of which is that quietism, which is it's a real temptation for a vibe.
Mm-hmm.
Is that just I'm here but I'm out of here.
Okay, I'm not gonna deal with it.
And there's also despair, which is another quite dramatic place that conditioning can take me. And so to stay in with intention and enthusiasm, when much of what's going on is disappointing, is just really an interesting challenge.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of what was just talked about, what the mentor's been saying to me about some habits I have, is if you're going to do that, the mentor never says don't do it. And what the mentor says is, if you're going to do it, and if you're doing it because you feel that you enjoy it, make sure you enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And also, there are things that I do because it's just that time of day. So the mentor also says, check in and see if you want it. Check and see if you actually want that.
Mm-hmm.
It's that checking in that I don't do often. And then, as I'm doing it, keep checking in, am I enjoying this? Because if I'm not enjoying it, I might as well not do it.
Yeah,
if so I'm doing it, I might as well really enjoy it.
So what I hear you saying is just really paying attention to the thing as it's happening, rather than being in some kind of story about it. You know, it's easy to imagine. I was thinking earlier about, as June was talking about, this guy that I actually worked for him a long time ago who had a cocaine habit. And he just told me about it one time. And, you know, he would get some cocaine and then he would just be unable to stop until it was completely gone. And it didn't, you know, it would go on and on and on. He didn't want to be doing it, and he knew he didn't want to be doing it, but would be completely incapable of doing anything about that. And so, you know, there's like a, it's easy to protect. There's just so much conditioning in that that's being reinforced. And what I hear you saying is, so here's the habit, and so it might be whatever it is. It has that same kind of drive behind it, but you're looking to see really what's really so about that from outside of it, for example, You know, is this, like you said, is this really enjoyable, or is there something else going on?
Well, as I hear you reflect that, in my experience, I have two levels of things that I do. One is things that I do sort of mindlessly and unconsciously as a matter of habit.
Mm-hmm.
And
without that drive, kind of?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what I'm told is I enjoy them.
Huh.
So what the mentor says is check in and make sure you actually are.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a story, and I enjoy it. And,
right,
and
yeah, that's the insight. From inside it, I enjoy it. But there's no really perspective on that.
Yeah, and so if I really check in, I may be enjoying it or not. And so that's just something really important to notice, and if I'm not, I should stop. Then I, you know, as an ex-smoker, I also have the kind of habit that's utterly compelling and addictive.
Mm-hmm.
And in my experience there, I had to stop. There was no, I mean, I, you know, I'm one of those who gave it up 1,000 times, you know, and
uh-huh.
started borrowing cigarettes from other people.
and
what I found there, though, that was really helpful was that if a certain time of day passed, if I would have these cravings at times of day or with certain kinds of food,
mm-hmm.
and, if I let that moment pass, I would often find a few moments down the line that I'd forgotten about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that saved my life. Because the story I had was I wanted it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And what I discovered was I didn't.
It really is disidentification, isn't it? It's stepping out of that story. So in one case, like with cigarettes, gotta have this. You know, with the other one, with those, you know, kind of the habitual things, you know, I enjoy this. You know, both those are not conscious, aware kind of places. They're just being inside the story, living in the story. And what you're talking about is disidentifying and just stepping to a larger place where there's a free choice about the things instead of just being pushed along by that story.
Yes, and I think it, at one level, it's something I can continue to do in moderation, truly. And at the other level, like the smoking level, no way. I mean, I can't imagine that I could ever do that again.
Mm-hmm.
And I also just want to say that the patterns are really strong because I know that after I gave up smoking, I had dreams in which I was smoking for the next 10 years.
Wow, that's amazing.
And always, it was funny, always in the dream, I was explaining to people that I could do it in moderation.
Well, it's funny because, you know, from that outside perspective, we'd have to look at it and say, so what is being done? You know, it's not smoking, even though there is a, you know, there's a chemical dependency.
There's a chemical thing with smoking.
Yeah, but there's something else there too, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, what is being done? And what need is attempting to be met? Because, so we could say, well, you can't. And that's my experience too with smoking. You know, you can't just do it in moderation. But what is attempted to be? Can't think of the English. What are you attempting to take care of in that you could do in ways that are not self-destructive?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I do. And I don't know that at the time I gave up smoking, I understood that or could tell mm-hmm. you the answer to that. But mm-hmm. I know what you're saying.
Yeah, you just knew you couldn't smoke anymore because I was. I guess I was killing you or whatever it was.
Right.
Yeah. But what about since then? I mean, have you...
Well, you know, it's interesting. I often wondered, you know, apparently when I was young, I was a compulsive thumb sucker.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm guessing I was part of the bottle baby time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm guessing there was oral deprivation at some early stage, and the smoking was partly on that. I don't know that for sure, but I'm guessing. And that's primal. You know, that's a real primitive kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it maybe even goes back to those kind of roots. But it's obviously, for me, it was some need of comfort. You know, any moment of anxiety, I would buy a cigarette.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to joke about, you know, when you can't give up cigarettes when you're nervous because you need them, and then if you give up smoking when you're not nervous, it'll make you nervous. So, but it was connected to anxiety. It was connected to discomfort. And it was a way of allaying discomfort.
Yeah, such a perfect picture of how conditioning works, isn't it? Because
mm-hmm.
it'll take something that's an attempt to meet a need and make it, for one thing, it's self-destructive,
right.
which is destructive of the body, which is interesting. And then also, of course, you know, there's I shouldn't be doing this probably, and you know, I know it's destructive, and so
yeah.
then it just adds a self-hate on top of that.
Yeah. Yeah. But I say at the time, I gave it up without any awareness to bring to it, other than I hadn't given up.
Well, there was that awareness.
That I could get through those
times. That you could get through those times. That's a big awareness.
It was a big awareness. It really mm-hmm. saved me. But I mean, I didn't have that kind of perspective.
The larger perspective.
About,
yeah. yeah.
And so I'm just guessing it was a way of dealing with anxiety,
mm-hmm.
discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
It was soothing in some way.
Yeah, and then taking that away, I would bet then that almost forces attention to another way of dealing with that anxiety.
Yeah, I don't know what it was at the time, but.
Nikki.
Well, I have been working on a project that sounds somewhat similar to what was being referred to, although it's, in a way, the content seems kind of different, but one of the things that I got clear on when I was at Santa Sabina this year was that this was the year to really take on my karma about the voices telling me I have something terrible wrong with me and I'm going to die, because that particular form of conditioning just causes incredible anxiety and suffering in this physical body.
That would be your form of indulgence.
It is, yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it's how it feels similar to me is that, so I've taken on this project with the mentor to really take it on this year. And interestingly enough, ever since I made that commitment to take it on, it's escalated enormously.
We could
right.
Think of that.
I was going to say, no surprise there.
Yeah, that's what always happens.
So the thing that seems similar to what was being talked about for me is that when that comes in, you know, I can be going along and I'm just doing my life, and then all of a sudden, I don't know, X appears in my body, and with it is an immediate, oh my God, you know, that's terrible. It's so physiological. It just, you know, grips me in this terror. That even though I go, oh, there it is, it's happening again. So far, the ability to sort of step through it and just continue with what I'm doing without carrying that sensation with me is so far not possible.
It really is similar to what Jean was talking about.
Yeah,
completely
exactly.
Different
exactly.
Content.
Yeah.
But it's like it's an all or nothing. You get started, and there's just no way out all the way through it.
That's right. That's what it feels like. You know, even though it's like I know exactly what this is, you know, I know that, you know, conditioning will want to tell me, oh, this time it's really, really real. And, you know, and I go, look, and how many times have you told me this is really, really real? And it isn't. Mm-hmm. Hasn't been. Why should this one be? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I can see all of that, and yet, just trying to drop, you know, the story and the sensations and kind of walk away from it is almost like something I can't do yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what I've been putting my faith in is just the fact that we're committed to working on it, that somehow in the course of this year we're going to do it. And I don't yet know how. Now, the mentor actually has told me some things to do when that happens. Like she says, when that comes up, when you feel yourself caught in that, you know, drop what you're doing and, you know, go take a walk.
Mm-hmm.
Even if, just move your body, even if it's 10 minutes down the road and back. Or she'll say, you know, get out the recorder right away. Or go sit on the cushion for 10 minutes. You know, she basically what she's saying is just do anything you can to break where your attention is.
Get out of that story and get in your body.
Get out of that story and get in your body.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes I can do it, and sometimes I actually, it's like what was being talked about. Sometimes I can't even do that. It's like I know I should go move my body, but I'm just so consumed by this, I can't even get up and do it.
Yeah, I wonder if it's the case, that, you know, same as, you know, the potato chips or the brownies or you know, same as the cigarettes, that, you know, I wonder if it really even matters about the thing itself.
Yeah.
Or if it's
yeah.
more about the, you know, just like you said, that process of attending to it.
Yeah.
There's just so much in that. I feel like it feels like that's what we want.
Yeah.
You know, because what I think I was looking at when you were talking is, at some point, the voice is going to say, I've got whatever, and it's going to be true.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
And what are you going to want at that point? You're not going to want a well-developed habit of going into conditioned mind and a story to try to survive that.
Right.
You're going to want a well-developed, it's not really a habit, but a well-developed consciousness that allows you to be present
right.
with that,
right.
even though it's not going to come out the way you want it to.
Right.
You know, it's going to end in, you know,
where it's all going to end someday anyway.
Exactly. Yeah. So you know, so this is one of the what you practice and what you have kind of things. And it sounds like that's really very much what you're doing. But I wonder if it even, like, during this year, I suspect you probably will find out, you'll find your way through this just because of the way you said that.
Yeah.
But on one level, I even wonder, does that even matter? Yeah. Or if it's more about just practicing in that way.
Yeah, maybe so, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, because in sort of rational terms, you know, I can go to the place of, you know, I know lots of people who have terrible things wrong with them, and they're really happy people and living good lives, and so I go, you know, what would it matter if that voice was right, you know? Either life would go on or it wouldn't.
Yeah.
And I can get there up here, you know, but sort of that getting there in terms of I don't need to go down that path every time it happens.
That's a whole other thing.
That's right. That's the one. That's the one I'm going for, you know. Do I really have to be led down? Because it's actually, I think, physiologically is affecting what's going on in my body.
Oh, I bet it is.
It is. I mean, my blood pressure's gone up.
Yeah, but it's attempting to create what it's predicting.
Yes, and it's actually doing something right now, which it hasn't been able to do that before. But, I mean, I guess, so I can see all the reasons why, you know, in a way, like the cigarettes, why I need to really stop.
It's one of those, I bet other people speak to this too as we continue with that topic, but we've had, you know, many, many conversations here about cigarettes. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of ex-smokers in the room. Are you? And, you know, what I've heard people talk about in the past, it's been really helpful for me, is, you know, I want to quit, can't, want to quit, try, fail. And then at some point, it's just, I'm done. And I bet you that's, because we can have all the reasons in the world.
Yeah.
And that's not going to get you there.
Yeah,
but it's just suddenly a shift inside. And okay, I'm finished with that, and I can tell that I'm never going to touch it again.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I don't remember how that happened with me for cigarettes, but I do have a story about how that happened with me with something else.
Mm-hmm.
I used to, well, in some ways I still am, but I used to be, and this is way back when I was probably in my 30s, 40s, a really nervous driver at speed. You know, I'd actually been in a car accident, and I think I was carrying around the residual of that, but I, you know, like getting on an interstate and driving at that speed was just beyond me, you know. And so I would, if I had to go somewhere, I was living in a different part of the country this time, I would leave in time enough that I could wind my way there.
Take all the little roads.
All the little roads, and I never had to do it. And one time I was late for something that I really couldn't be late for, and I had to get on the turnpike. And I was just, you know, just like this. And when I got to the toll booth, this was a place with a toll booth, and I had to toss money into the basket. And I was so wound up that I just grabbed handfuls of change and flung it in there until I managed to get enough in that the light said I could go. And I laughed. I just got the laughing so hard about how ridiculous that was that it stopped like that. And from then on, I never had that problem.
Wow, that's amazing.
I know. It was amazing.
You know, tell me if this has anything to do with it. A minute ago, as you were talking, what I was looking at is, so at some point, you will have something.
Yeah.
Just like we all will.
Yeah.
And I bet you anything what will happen then is there won't be a voice.
I bet you're right.
You'll just have it, and you'll respond to whatever that is.
Absolutely.
And so I wonder if that's the same thing. It's just suddenly, it's like entering a different world or a different space or something where you're actually dealing with something that's here instead of just in this imaginary world where we're just making stuff up to suffer over.
Yeah.
You're actually on the road.
Yeah.
And so, gosh, we don't, this is not helpful. I need to be present so I can drive.
Yeah. And I'd like to not wait till I get to that place.
Well, what I hear is you're heading towards. You know, heading towards that place where, I mean, who knows what will happen, but, I actually don't have to do this anymore.
Yeah.
I don't need to suffer in this way anymore because there's something else available. Just, it's like it's crossing that line that we're talking about. And in my experience, sure, is the way we get there is exactly what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, knowing it's not what I want, knowing it's not the right answer, trying not to have it happen, still happening over and over and over again. And I don't know what happens in there, but it's just like kind of softening us up for the willingness to finally step over the line and say, okay, that's it, I'm through.
Yeah, yeah. Two things that come to me about that is I often come to that image of William Penn's sword, you know, mm-hmm. I'll carry it as long as I need to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as long as I can. And the other thing that I think I heard when June was talking is that there are other places where I really am keeping commitments to me, and I think that helps, even though I'm not, quote, being successful so far with this one,
mm-hmm.
knowing that I'm stepping up in these other ways.
Mm-hmm. That you can do that, you want to do that.
Is a, I think, a positive
thing. Well, if your commitment is to paying attention and taking care of yourself mm-hmm. rather than ending the behavior, then you're keeping that one, too.
Yeah, because I, as part of my practice this year, I have a commitment on alternate months to do either a 30-day retreat or the 30 exercises from the new book.
Mm-hmm.
And so this month is a 30-day retreat, and it's actually the first time I've ever done a 30-day retreat in 30 days.
All right.
Yeah. It is quite an accomplishment.
Yeah, that's hard to do.
And one of the things that made that so possible is doing the daily evening review with a recorder instead of in a journal.
Mm-hmm.
It's Ooh. Made a huge difference. It's like, oh, I
have to try that.
I can just pick it up and talk what I've seen during the day and how I did with my assignment, and it's like
way better than
it's
writing.
A whole new world. Yeah, it's way better than writing, partly because it's I don't know, it flows more, and then I get to listen to it again.
It.
I never went back and read my journals,
uh-huh.
but I listened to it.
So you get reminded. That's cool.
It is cool.
That's neat. Melinda.
I'm going to steal that one.
Yeah, me too.
And I've been looking at, it's a really interesting conversation. I, over the years, have dealt with all kinds of addictions. I mean, smoking, of course, being one of them. And looking at all of those as we've been talking, and it feels like a lot goes into the place, getting to the place of being able to say, I'm done. And really becoming aware of what it's doing to me, and really enjoying it. Yeah, that's
okay.
That feels like a really important one, and also having permission to do it, whatever it is.
Oh, that's good. Mm-hmm.
So no, you know, no beatings. Mm-hmm. If I have another chocolate chip cookie, this being one of the more recent ones. And I'm going to watch. And as I watch, I see how I feel an hour later, which is really not good because I can't stay awake. That's the effect it has on me. So that really becoming conscious of not only of what it does to me physically, but of sort of how it's compelling me to do something is a place of not being free.
Yeah. Well, you put those two things together where you have, there's no shoulds.
And
no
shoulds.
You have complete permission to do this.
Yeah.
Doesn't make you a bad person, doesn't mean anything about you, anything. You can absolutely do this thing.
Yeah.
And we're really going to pay attention as we do it. We talk about a winning combination.
Yeah, because that paying attention and realizing, I mean, maybe something doesn't make me feel really bad. I can have one cup of my favorite Darjeeling tea, and it's great. I enjoy the entire thing. It's when I have a second, that's when I get in trouble because I start getting, but just, so I have permission to have whatever, and sort of just in being with it and watching and having the experience I have, a lot of stuff falls away, mm-hmm. which is currently what's happened around sugar, which amazes me. But it's like, you know, when we have desserts, it's great. But that place of, I can't wait and I've got to have more,
mm-hmm.
has pretty much disappeared.
Yeah, well, you would, yeah. Melanie just tapped on the mic. But you would, it's what I would project onto that is you divided what's the sugar and what's the not sugar. You know, because the sugar is just sweetness in some kind of food. What's not sugar is, you know, that I want to have it right now. That's not sugar. That's, you know, it's basically I want to suffer. You know, I want to feel bad. I want to be engaged with conditioning and so on.
Yes.
So you separate those two. You get rid of, you know, the real addiction, of course, is to the conditioning, not to the sugar. Mm. So, you know, you get rid of that addiction, and then you're at choice with the sugar. You enjoy it when it happens, but it's not, it's not leading towards something else that's not at all sugar, but it's just a form of suffering.
Yeah, and the reward is enormous because there is the freedom that used to be sort of being harnessed by conditioning and driven to do whatever. And there are a couple other techniques that I found really helpful along the way. I can't remember what they were now. One is to postpone satisfaction. So to wait a half an hour before I go ahead and have the cookie.
Mm-hmm.
There's some actually research done that says if you wait 15 minutes to, for instance, have that cigarette, that the craving is likely to disappear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and from our perspective, you know, boy, it's easy to make up some stuff about that. Like, the person who wants it is no longer there.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the thing that Sherry says, wherever she got from, that, you know, legitimate emotion lasts like 20 seconds or whatever it is, remember that? So something like that. It's like, if you, okay, well, there's somebody here, that somebody can only be here for so long because that's how it is. Things are moving around.
Yeah.
And so, okay, I got to have the sugar, a cigarette is a somebody.
Yeah.
You hang out, and then you have somebody else there who doesn't really care anymore.
Doesn't care about it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the other thing is it can be really fun to do it all as an imagery. So to go ahead and have the chocolate chip cookie in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I have done that and have it be incredibly satisfying. Without the calories or the sweetness.
Yeah, that's the thing that Tony used to talk about all the time. I don't know if you remember that, but like following it up to the end.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
so it's
exactly.
Like the story ends with, I get the cookie, I feel fabulous.
Yeah.
It doesn't go on, and then my stomach hurts, and I can't follow it.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So you follow it all the way out to the end, it really kind of gives you a larger perspective.
Yeah, you have whole imagery, you know, you brush the crumbs off yourself, and you just go through the whole thing as if you were doing it. And it's like all the research about people who play piano and practice in their minds actually get just as good as the people who practice.
Oh, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So those are little things learned. I feel like I could talk forever in the laundry list of addictions that I've managed to.
One thing particularly that I enjoyed when you were talking about the Darjeeling tea, because I think you're talking about that larger place of awareness where you know, you're at choice, and also there's perspective there that can really decide what's good for the being, and that comes from, I think, what you're saying about you pay attention and see what happens. So you've noticed, you know, it cannot be questioned anymore that second cup of Darjeeling makes something happen to you that is not what you really want, it's not good for you.
And, it's not worth the trade-off. I mean, I still enjoy the taste, but I don't enjoy the
result. But you know that one cup of Darjeeling and you're fine. And so because there's a big person there, instead of a little person stuck within the addiction, then you can allow yourself to enjoy that first cup of Darjeeling, knowing you don't have to have the second and have the consequences for it.
Yeah, and I think one of the main ways that conditioning enables us to continue with addictions like that is keeping us unconscious of how it actually feels.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because that just disappears into a story, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Instead of just seeing, okay, that equals that. You know, the cookie equals this feeling. And, you know, instead what happens is there's this whole story here, and then eat the cookie. Whole story here, but never the twain shall meet.
Right.
It's not, there's no conscious connection there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brian.
No, just a quick little note on the power of imagery. My guitar professor used to always talk about one of his professors who would learn pieces of music on airplanes. So he'd be flying somewhere to go do a concert and have the sheet music and just sit there and go through the sheet music and imagine himself playing the piece, how he would finger it and
what
combination, and get off the plane, pick up a guitar, and be able to play from memory.
Oh, that's amazing.
Which I saw a little bit of people doing that in various music worlds, but I've never seen anybody do that. But with the addiction thing, it's really funny for me to hear because I have such different content and the exact same processes. Like, I love to smoke, but I've never had a problem with, like, if I get a cold, I stop smoking. And usually for like 6 months because my tobacco goes bad, And I don't really want to go back down to the tobacconist. I smoke a, you know, like a pipe. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to go all the way to the tobacconist. Ah. You know, 6 months later, just got this dried out tobacco. I'm like, that was pretty fun. Maybe I'll do that again. Right. Yeah. And, you know, but especially when I was in school, I had a couple of semesters where I was taking like 4 math classes and had some serious periods of time where I just didn't want to deal with that. And wherever there was a deep conditioning to distraction, really addictive behaviors would start popping up. And so I had a huge problem. I had 3 kind of big problems. Playing video games. And I mean, my relationship with that is what people describe as smoking. Mm-hmm. I'm going to stop doing this. I got to stop doing this. This is really bad. Just one little. And then, you know, it's 3 weeks later, and I've been playing video games for 8, 9, 10 hours a day for 3 weeks. Whoa, what happened? I actually haven't been to class in 3 weeks. I should probably go check into that.
Well, you just imagine the self-hate inside that.
Yeah, it's not a pleasant experience, and it really is the checking in, you know, because you know, you play an hour or two of video games, and your body already feels kind of crappy. You know, it's like, oh, I've got this eye strain, and I haven't eaten well recently. I should go do something else. And if that level of awareness is there, it just stops. Mm-hmm. You know, all of the feedback from life is there to make it clear that that's not the thing to do. But if the conditioning is really strong towards distraction, then off you go. Mm-hmm. And
it's kind of like an intervention. Just somehow getting your attention in there and breaking the pattern.
And I had the same relationship with kind of having a messy room. That was something that was like, I don't know, it was, I think, really complicated, but it was kind of like, this is my space, it can be however I want it to be, and people always tell me I need to be tidy, so I get, you know, and just being in that in some way was a way of getting away from, mm-hmm. you know, the world where I had to show up to places and mm-hmm. give people assignments and take tests and things like that. And so that is a really strong pull towards just even I step into the room, I look around and just go unconscious. Mm-hmm. And that is something that I've worked on, that I've actually been working on, just kind of generally being tidy and whatnot, and really found that I had to take a really oblique kind of approach to it. I had to flank around it. And just recently, the last week or two, I had the experience of kind of stepping into my hermitage and going, wow, it looks like somebody who actually cares lives here.
Wow. That's so great. Which is what's going on. Somebody cares enough.
Mm-hmm. And somebody's present enough to the experience of being in that space to look around and go, oh, this should go over here. Oh, you know, this needs tidying up. Oh, mm-hmm. you know, this should sweep in that corner. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's the first time I can ever remember having that experience mm-hmm. with my space. Mm-hmm. And that took a lot of, well, I get a lot of resistance here with this particular thing, and I know it's an issue, but where's something similar that I can work on that? You know, so I fold a lot of towels. That's just been my thing. It's just, okay, well, I'm gonna make this really tidy and get really practiced at looking at something that's not so tidy and tidying it and being present for that whole mm-hmm. experience and really being present for the fact that it's not, you know, it's not actually torture. You know, nobody is actually going to come and pluck my eyeballs out if I start folding something.
Quite the opposite. It sounds like it's pleasurable.
Yeah, it's really nice. It's just a nice little moment of being present for something. But that is so not the story. And then, you know, weeks of kind of finding little areas in my life where that conditioning towards distraction isn't really strong and present. I'm just practicing the kinds of skills. And then seeing that, you know, being able to extend that into the face of this really strong conditioning mm-hmm. to just go unconscious. That's kind of the reward for setting up this whole condition. And I also noticed that though with food, where the sweetness, like sugar, I generally don't eat sugar and haven't for many years. But if it's around and I'm stressed out, then I will eat sugar just because the sensations are distracting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a really powerful sensation. I just go into that for a while and just check out of whatever, you know, and have all of the consequences of that. Because I'm in the quickly go to sleep kind of category. So, and, you know, then that becomes part of a cycle of eat the sugar to be distracted and then pass out so I don't have to deal with my commitments and whatnot. That's one, it doesn't come up often enough, and it kind of interacts with that quietism that, you know, it's not actually a really free place that I exist in with that, because I just don't eat sugar.
I see.
I just generally really don't like what it does with my body, and so I don't keep it around, but excuse me. Before, when I lived with a roommate, you know, sometimes his mother would, for whatever reason, bring up all these cookies and stuff, and he was trying to lose weight, so he was like, "Oh man, can you eat those, man?" Well, yes. Yes. Actually, it's exam season. I can definitely eat those. I don't know, it's just really interesting to see how kind of in areas where the conditioning exists towards distraction, those behaviors happen. But, you know, once again, tobacco, alcohol, for whatever reason.
No problem.
No problem at all. Mm-hmm. Right? Do it for a while. Eh. Mm-hmm. Forget to do it. You know, forget to smoke, which people... Yeah, exactly. That's the response that I was getting. You know, people just like, what? It's like, I forgot that I had a pipe and a bunch of tobacco. But man, I never forgot those video games.
Yeah, that's funny, isn't it? June.
Well, I want a recording. I want a copy of the recording, please.
Oh, okay. We can do that, actually.
Or it goes online.
It goes online, yeah.
Okay, Got it. That's true. There's just, you know, volumes, but... you know, the plate of brownies is my difficult co-worker.
I can just see you sitting around in front of the computer and saying, "Eat me, come on."
And, you know, to bring mindfulness and to bring courage to me, you know, I'm not sure whether the person who asked the original question is angling for satisfying the sugar addiction, distraction addiction.
Instead of being free of it, do you mean?
Who just wants to just keep it alive. or whether... I just want to be free to enjoy what there is in my life.
Yeah, well, that's a great koan, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, what's actually going on there?
Yeah. So, that's a complicating factor.
Well, that's your challenge, isn't it? That's your practice opportunity.
Well, that's a huge part of it, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, to find out the answer to that question, that's really liberating. I think what you're talking about is what really takes care of the bee and what doesn't.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing is let's bake something this afternoon and just watch me carefully. Just pay attention, write it all down, set up, be accountable to someone. You know, call my sister or something and say, "Hey, I'm doing this. I'm going to report to you where I go with this." And a huge piece of it that I saw, I think, while Amanda was talking, is I can know that I don't really want the next cookie conditioning, self-hate, that karma wants to stay in place so hard that I literally cannot stay present in the face of its, of its story.
Boy, we all know that one, don't we? Yep.
It's, I don't care whether or not you want this. that's really it.
Yeah, that's really it. Yeah. It really wants you to stay addicted to it and to its control over you.
So, I'm not going to go.
Well, if you need help experimenting, give us a little Yeah. Well, it's just so great, because I love that, because, you know, there's no rules. You know, it really is a process of discovering what is going on. It's a huge science experiment, this whole thing.
There's another thing I saw somewhere during the discussion was, one of the ways that it all maintains itself is I'm not allowed to do something like buy a bag of cookies. I just don't do that. I might do it once a year. And with that one bag of cookies, the deprivation and the is so strong that it just lives out. See, I told you you couldn't do it. So it's actually occurred to me to go to the store and buy 10 bags of cookies. And just keep them, just keep all the basically junk food around that I want, that I want, that I say she wants. And I get panic. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, well, you know, it's hard to know, really, because what I hear in that is you don't get to have the cookies. You do get to have the self-hate and the abuse.
Yeah.
And I'm predicting that's where that comes from.
I don't get to enjoy the cookies. I get to enjoy the self-hate and abuse.
Exactly. Yeah. And so if you look at, well, which one has the most impact on life and even the body, you know, it's got to be the self-hate, not the cookies. And so if we're going to choose between the two, why choose the cookies over the self-hate? Not that it has to be an either-or, but it sounds like at this point, conditioning's got it set up to be an either-or, and it's got you always choosing it instead of, you know, not it.
Yes, yes. And in other areas, like going out to eat, eating half of something and taking the rest home, I've been having a lot of success. And as I say, I am losing weight. So, as Brian was indicating, you know, the process in places where it's working, where I am being able to stay present enough to keep the commitment, is building.
Your ability to do that is getting stronger. Yeah, there's just, and what you're saying and what a lot of people said this morning, such a focus of attention and intention also on it. Wow, I mean, that's really powerful. I can just really see things happening. We don't know where they're going to go, but with that kind of focus, there's just a lot of things that become available, it seems like.
So, thank you.
Thank you. That's our time. Thank you.